Hello and welcome to the Minds in the Frontline podcast, brought to you by the Frontline Strong Together 5 program. FST 5 provides streamlined access to behavioral and mental health services, as well as crisis resources for Michigan's Frontline 5 workers and their families. This includes all professional, part-time, and volunteer firefighters, EMS, law enforcement, corrections officers, and 911 dispatchers in Michigan and their immediate family members. First responders and mental health experts collaboratively created FST 5 to provide 24/7 live support, effective resources, and cutting-edge services to prevent and alleviate PTSD, anxiety, depression, and other frontline work-related mental and behavioral health challenges. Need help now? If you are a frontline worker in Michigan or an immediate family member experiencing any crisis, work-related, substance abuse, depression, relationships, finances, or any other, reach out by calling 1-833-34-STRONG or go to fst5.org for more information. I'm Jeff Lassers, one of the hosts of the Minds on the Frontline podcast, and I'm a professional firefighter, paramedic, educator, and content creator. Minds on the Frontline is co-hosted by Mike Mattern, who is also a professional firefighter and paramedic. In addition, Mike is a peer support team member for his fire department and the Frontline Strong Together 5 program, as well as the chair of the Michigan Professional Firefighters Union Behavioral Health Committee and a board member of the Michigan Crisis Response Association. Mike has training and experience with frontline worker mental and behavioral health. On the other hand, I do not. My role is to produce the show, whereas Mike is our resident subject matter expert. Together, we hope to inform, educate, and entertain frontline workers, their families, and the public regarding the realities of frontline work-related mental and behavioral health challenges. In today's episode, we have the honor of welcoming Crystal Little, who is an EMS captain with Palm Beach County Fire Rescue. In addition, Crystal is a certified health and wellness coach, a yoga teacher, a somatic breathwork facilitator, and a Marazco cold water guide. Although Crystal is an effective, motivated, and healthy member of the frontline community, it wasn't always so easy for her. Like many of us, she has had to learn healthy coping skills that provide her with the necessary resiliency to maintain mental, emotional, and physical strength. Crystal is here to highlight the power of breathing as a means to foster resilience in the face of life's stresses. This simple yet profound act holds the key to balancing the autonomic nervous system by engaging the parasympathetic branch, which is the calming rest and digest system. This branch acts as a counterpoint to the sympathetic system's fight or flight mode, restoring equilibrium. Breathing does this by activating the vagus nerve, the key component to the parasympathetic system, which, when stimulated through slow, deep breaths, signals safety and relaxation to the body. This process not only reduces the heart rate and blood pressure, fostering calm, but also enhances vagal tone, which is a measure of the vagus nerve's health and activity. A robust vagal tone is linked to improved emotional control and lower stress levels. Also, such breathing practices tempers stress responses, allowing the body to move from alertness to a more restful state where healing can happen. Breathwork can also increase heart rate variability, or HRV, which is a sign of a dynamic and robust stress response system, reflecting a well-adjusted autonomic nervous system. A higher HRV means the body can handle stress more adaptively. Breathwork serves as a link between our intentional actions and the body's automatic functions, giving us a potent tool to guide our nervous system and tap into our natural ability to relax. In essence, targeted breathing patterns are a gateway to engaging the parasympathetic nervous system. They underscore how breath control can be a transformative practice for our physical and mental well-being, underlying the significant influence that breathing exercises can exert on our holistic health. During this episode, Crystal is eager to share her enthusiasm for breathwork and the many ways it can improve our lives. She'll break down the basics of somatic release breathwork, showing us how it can heal our emotions and bodies. Plus, Crystal will introduce us to some great additional practices, such as float tanks, cold plunges, and heat bathing. She'll explain in simple terms how these activities, along with breathwork, can help frontline workers and anyone looking to enhance their overall health and happiness. You can find more information about Crystal and her offerings at alittlereset.com. Please check us out on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and make sure to like and subscribe to all Minds on the Frontline podcast social media channels. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Good morning, Crystal. How are you?
Good morning. I'm wonderful. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for joining us today on the Minds of the Frontline podcast. Give everybody an overview of who you are, what you do, and where you do it.
All right. Well, I'm a 19-year EMS captain with Palm Beach County Fire Rescue, hired as a baby. Outside of that, why I'm here today, I've been a yoga teacher since 2019, which is kind of an oxymoron being that 2019, which I'll get into, was the year I lost my marbles. But I went to yoga teacher training, which kind of helped me start to climb out of that hole I was in. I've become a somatic breathwork facilitator. I'm a Morosco cold water guide. I went to Chris Kresser's Adapt Health and Wellness School. So I'm a certified health and wellness coach, and recently became a safe and sound protocol provider, which also works with the nervous system. But man, that sounds wonderful, right? I'm like, oh yeah, she's got it together. But man, let me tell you, I was not always this person. Like I said, I got hired when I was 20. So I've been on, I'm in my 20th year, but I learned a couple years back, by 5, 6, maybe when I got to 30, I realized you're a kid when you're 20. So I grew up in the fire service, which is both a blessing and a curse. We were just talking about, you know, going through the process of school and all that. And when you're young, it's easy, no responsibilities. But also, you're an idiot. Also, you do dumb things. So I look back at some of the things I said and did and trouble I got into growing up in the fire service, and it's just facepalm, right? Right. Cringe. And we are an unforgiving group. We will never let you forget your worst moments, the dumbest thing you ever did. We're going to remind you of it in 10 years. Don't get comfortable.
We'll remind you that your best moments weren't that great, yeah. Let alone your worst moments.
Exactly. When you think you're good, we're going to knock you right back down.
Firefighters don't forget.
Yeah, never.
No.
But I was always a doer. From the time I was like 15, I've had 3 jobs. You know, I was doing all kinds of things, and that did not change when I got hired by the fire service. I was teaching, I was training, I was working all kinds of odd jobs all the time, whether it was clinic, you name it, I was doing it. And I was just on the go. I'm a doer. Most of us are doers. I was never taught to self-regulate as a kid. I had an alcoholic father, which has its own thing that goes there, but I was never really taught. Now that I look back, I was always in a survival place as an adult, doing all the things. Work hard, play hard was my motto, right? So we work hard at work. What do? We party, we blow off steam. We're really good at that too. We have a great time. Like, we're a bunch of comedians. It's a circus and it's fantastic. However, I did not know that over the course of, I don't know, at this point, maybe 15 years of living that lifestyle, how it was really draining my ability to have healthy coping mechanisms, because I was never taught those, and what it was really doing to my body. And when I got to a point where I could not recover, I had to look back at this. I had to change my entire life. 2019 was my year that I hit my rock bottom. Some less than ideal events just were stressors that are normal stressors for normal people. Buying and selling homes, the sellers defaulted, I had nowhere to live, moved back home. All these things you can deal with in stride when you're in a healthy space, but I didn't realize where I really was. And so when I went to go blow off steam, went out, drank, made some poor decisions, and that just put me into a shame spiral that I had never really been in before. I was always able to bounce back and recover, like, oh, I did something dumb, got to recover, move on. But I wasn't able to do it. Like, I had reached the point at which I could not do this anymore. I was also in an unsafe relationship, which is also, you know, that in safety environment, whether it's at work or at home, anywhere, like, you got to have that to feel safe and to have more resources. So there was a lot of compounding factors. But by the end of that year, I had a loaded gun to my head and I was ready to just end it. I felt like I was a burden. I was hopeless. I had no joy. I was really struggling. And I just had a choice. God intervened, sent somebody to stop me. So I was very fortunate there and I made that choice. And over the last 5 years, I have learned these different things that helped me in a tremendous way. First, by I realize now it's a body first, ground up approach. Heal your body, the nervous system, the things that are going a little haywire, and that will then in turn affect the mind. So I was able to get mentally stronger with each new thing I found. And it's brought me here to meet you guys
That's
and talk about
amazing.
this and share it, because that's what I do. I teach, I share, I want everyone to feel this peace and the calm and the control I feel like I have over my emotions and my life that I did not have for a long time and I had no idea.
That's the amazing part. I mean, doing this and doing the mental health stuff, it's those people who have gone through those things and lived them and learned their lessons that way and have made it through the other side. So many of them, it's almost like their drive to now teach people how to get better. And a lot of people in the peer support, clinicians, mental health, all that, it's a common thread is like once you make it through that stuff, you can't wait to then help pull somebody else through that. It's amazing to watch
We're
because
connected.
yes.
We're all the same. It's like we're all one, right?
Yeah.
I can go way out into the metaphysical here, but we're all one. We all have similar emotions and experiences. The players are different. The scene is different, but we experience a lot of the same things, especially those of us in this industry. You know, I've always worked in busy areas, high volume, whether it's the geriatric community or, you know, poverty, it doesn't like they wear they'll wear you out and you don't realize how that's taxing you. You know that you're annoyed with that, but then you have the serious call and you don't even have the capacity to handle that because you're so burnt. And it's not just from the calls, it's
No.
from the lifestyle. It's the pounding of the alcohol, the drinking 24 hours of caffeine, it's the poor sleep, it's the crappy diet, and all of these are affecting it. So when we start to pull ourselves out and you really look at this picture, like I'm like, I gotta educate. I gotta share my story so that maybe it's not gonna resonate with everybody. And I don't have all the answers. These are just the things that I found that are things I can do and feel today. And that's gonna keep me coming back versus the 6 month, 1 year down the road. I'll still do those things. I'm one of those, but most of us are not. We wanna feel it now. So I have to share it because I can get them to be like, all right, I'll do this again.
Yeah, and I
This
think
is
it
uncomfortable, but I'll do it again.
when you get to that point and you're like, there's nothing there for me. And you're like, you never want somebody else to feel that hopelessness. When you're down in that hole, you feel like those walls are about 200 feet high. You never want someone else to feel that way. So you're like, I'm going to do something so that somebody else doesn't have to do what I did. And it's amazing when we meet people like that because you can tell the people who have been down in that hole. There's a famous scene. I'm a big West Wing guy. They talk about the guy stuck in the hole, you know, and the best way to get out is his buddy jumps in the hole with him. He goes, "What are you doing? You just jumped in the hole with me. Now we're both down here." He goes, "Yeah, but the difference is I found my way out and I'm going to show you how to get out." And that's awesome when we run into people just like yourself or and a lot of these other people. It's nice to see everybody's kind of doing their part to go, this is what I learned. This is where I came from. Let me show you the way.
Yeah, and I'm not here to fix anybody. I'm
No,
not a therapist. I'm not a
no.
nutritionist. I'm not a doctor of any sort. I just have a life experience, and I can't fix anybody. But I can get in there with you, and I could be with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so what I think is very unique about your situation is you're also recognizing not only did you find something to reset yourself as a human, but you can empathize, sympathize, and completely understand all the frontline workers' feelings and apply these coping mechanisms to help them. Now, you had a specific set of circumstances that made you feel that way. But like you said, high volume, we work hard, we play hard. The story you described, I can replace your face, name, situation, city with millions of other frontline workers who do the same thing. I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't live that thing. I worked my butt off. I did 3 days of overtime. Then I worked my side gig, made this money, did this. Guess what I'm doing tonight? I'm getting drunk,
I
right?
earned this.
And then you're already in a
But
bad
it's a
headspace.
badge of honor, right?
Right.
We
But you're in
just
this position where you literally set yourself up in the worst mental space to make decisions, and then you're going to stuff a bunch of alcohol in your system, which is going to compound those bad decisions. And guess what you're going to do? You're going to wake up going, oh, and then you're going to have the guilt spiral, and then you're going to repeat the cycle all the time. So what I love about what I'm hearing here today is that you have coping skills to help us break the cycle. And there's many different coping skills, but these are the ones that you have invested your personal time and growth into and said, I've experimented on myself. I'm a professional at this. I have objective data to back it up. let me help you chill the F out.
Yeah. Well, and there's that, right? Because we have to remember, like, I talk a lot about nervous system regulation. Nervous system regulation is not calming down. Like, man, I always think there's this one station in my department and one shift particularly. Like, I swear I'll put them up against any station shift in the country. They are the loudest, most energetic, most overwhelming group of men.
Challenge accepted.
And they're just like, I mean, like, it is, you're at a 10 plus from the beginning of the shift all the way through. Very overwhelming. But I think about this, and if I were to ask them, like, would you be willing to talk to somebody? They don't even know what to say.
Right.
And it's not about calming down. It's about being able to shift into the ready state and coming back to this neutral, engaged baseline consistently after a stressful event. So a lot of times we get stuck in this go, go, go mentality. And the only way to come down is to drink, which meanwhile, it's a sedative. And then we're just it, but it also increases that sympathetic system. So you're not really calming down. You're not counteracting anything. You're increasing it. But that's where we go. So it's not about like just finding this chill zen. Like,
right. You're not saying everybody turn into a chill.
On this. Yeah. Like,
no, I love what
I
you said there.
But it's not that.
Well, the tones go off anytime, right? So it's almost like learning how to control your nervous system to adapt to your life right now. Because right now we might have to get after it. And it's 3 a.m. and you just woke up. There's somebody trapped. Let's go. And then there's, hey, we just got somebody out, or we had a tough time with a patient. We had to struggle with somebody who's either having a mental crisis or whatever. Now you got to go the other way and get back to bed. And what you're saying is you have to control yourself in a way to not like be good. No, for your own benefit of health, finding the neutral.
You can't just redline all the time.
Yeah.
You can't live in the red line.
You got to take pit stops.
Exactly.
Well, that's the thing. That's like saying driving a car is only going in reverse, right?
Yeah.
Like you're just trying to calm. You're trying to go backwards. And you can't, it's autonomic, right? We actually cannot control the physiological response. So it's learning how to kind of de-stress, right? If you wouldn't be a very effective driver, if you almost hit somebody, now you only drive 5 miles per hour, like, oh, I need to calm down. Where are you going?
Yeah.
Or if you only go 100 miles an hour because you're going to be late for a plane or an appointment, right? Well, that's not good either. We got to drive the speed limit.
Okay, so what you're saying is the more you're able to tamper the spikes in these nervous system back and forth, the more you're able to just handle it without even thinking about calming down. You're just controlling.
It's autonomic.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's kind of like in our last episode we talked with Brian about EMDR. It's rewiring. It's the same concept.
Yep.
It's not saying you're going in any therapy, but no, like you're taking care of yourself in a way to allow your nervous system to heal. It's like fasting for your gut. You're letting that endothelial lining chill out a minute. It's letting things happen.
You're putting the governor on the engine.
Boom.
You're putting the governor on. You're not going above 65 no matter what.
Okay, so I'm excited.
Like,
let's get into the first
keep it
one.
In there.
But sometimes we got to go over 65.
Well, that's sometimes you got
to
do it.
But that's the point, is knowing that you're going to have to treat your body like an F1 Ferrari 1 minute and then treat it like a pavement princess when you get home. You know what I mean? That's kind of, right, big fancy truck that never sees the dirt, right? And look how nice. It's a velvet prison, right? But you get what I'm saying there. So walk us through some of these. Let's start with the breath work. Somatic release breath work. That sounds fancy. And I don't think your boys down there at the station screaming are going to go, you guys want to do some somatic breath work after every call?
Yeah, no. So this was something that was really profound for me. I have, we all listen to our influencers, our podcast people, our YouTube, whatever it is. And I was always listening to different people and they would talk about breath work. And I was on this mission. I'm like, I want breath work. But I knew that it wasn't like the alternate nostril pranayama breathing that I learned in yoga. I knew that it wasn't like this USA just down. And it wasn't Wim Hof. It wasn't like this excitatory, like if you're out in the elements doing like a plunge in Lake Michigan, like you want to be ready to go because you're in the elements. You're outside. You're not in a controlled environment. But I knew it wasn't that. I'm like, but I had no idea really what it was that I was looking for either. I hadn't heard any kind of description. A friend of mine who I now like facilitate with, she was doing a session and I got to participate. And in this session, it's somatic release. Somatic means of the body. We stimulate the nervous system with mouth breathing, like, and it's just connected mouth in and out. And it stimulates the nervous system. Cause you ever notice when you're running, right? What do? You end up breathing through your mouth because you're sympathetic. Where when you're resting in bed, right? You're probably breathing through your nose. So we use mouth breathing to stimulate nervous system. And when you start to do that, I mean, like 30 seconds in, I start to feel my shoulders. I'm like, my ears are getting hot. I'm like, I want to move and wiggle. And this is all stagnant energy that I've been holding, right? It's completing the emotional circuit. So if you've ever been in a situation where you wanted to rage, but it was not appropriate, maybe you wanted to cry and you didn't feel like safe enough to do that. Or you're with your buddy in a class, because I know we can all relate to this one. Someone's making a joke, but you can't laugh because it's inappropriate and you're going to get, because that's what we do, but we hold it in and we're like snickering. All of energy, emotions are energy in motion. If you don't express it, it's still there. It's just stuck. So when we stimulate that nervous system, we begin to express and you de-stress the body because what you suppress becomes distress, which can become dis-ease. Whatever your beliefs are, those are mine, right? So you get to express and fully like let it rip. Like you can rage, you can move, you can laugh. And I'm like a crazy person, right? I go through like all of the emotions, right? I sob, I laugh because I'm like, why was I cry? Like, why did I hold this for so long? And then I'm like, I go through anger. It's a mess. But in the end, right? So we let go of like our limitations, like the patterns we don't want to hold on to, where we're holding stress and all of this. And then the second half isn't nasal breathing. So it's very meditative, but it's repatterning. It's who you want to be. What's your purpose? What are you grateful for? What does your heart have for you? Like these messages that you really like connect to. Because after you've cleared out the space, the gunk that you were holding, you have like a clear channel to really connect to yourself. So it's nasal breathing and then it's very meditative for like 30 minutes. So in the end, not only are you increasing your HRV because we're downregulating the system, but you just have this feeling of euphoria. And that was what I was looking for. And I didn't know it until I did it. And I was like, this is it. So what did I do? I got on a plane to Phoenix and I flew there for a 4-day course because I was like, I did it literally one time. And I was like, yep, this is it. I need to share this. Like I just went. Like I
All
had been
in.
looking.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very All firefighter of you. I mean,
Yes.
let's go.
That's it.
I
Let's
bought
do
all the
it right
things.
now.
Look at me. I got all the gear. It's great.
Yep.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. I took one session. I flew to Phoenix, got certified, came back, and I'm like, here we go. I need to share this. But that's not the only style of breath work that there is out there. So there's so many benefits to do. Like a lot of us hear like Jocko Willink or these guys, right? Box breathing. We teach it in firefighter survival classes, right? You know, if you're stuck somewhere, you're in a confined space prop, what do? Hum, right? Or in for four, hold for four, out for four, hold for four, right? And that'll start to downregulate your system. So in the moment of 4-7-8 breath, these things will start to decrease your feelings of stress and anxiety. It'll stimulate the vagus nerve, which is the main mediator of the parasympathetic nervous system, right? I play with different styles of breath work. There's the whole like somatic release process. That's like an hour session. But I do breath work all the time. Every time I kind of get lost in thought or whatever, or my jaw's clenched or my tongue is stuck to the roof of my mouth, I'm like, oh, wait, let me do a couple, like, let me go back to my breath. Where am I breathing? And I'll do box breathing or any of these things. But they help holistically treat the nervous system in that way. So it decreases the overactivation of the amygdala, which is where we get our emotions and our reactions, the lizard brain, the
Yeah,
monkey
it's the
brain,
smoke
our
alarm. Yep.
animalistic.
Yeah, you know, it's like,
So,
wah, 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 everybody go crazy. God, quiet
yeah.
that
It's
thing.
like when you're walking down the street and you see a stick, but your brain for a second thinks it's a snake and you jump back and you're like, oh, that's the amygdala. You didn't control that response. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, it's a stick. Cool. Downregulate,
That's a
keep on
Florida
walking.
problem.
That's
Right?
definitely a Florida
That is
problem.
a Florida
We just
problem.
see
You're right.
like
I'm here
murder
for you, Chase.
states. Yeah.
Right?
There's no
But it
snakes in the snow
also,
and the salt that are up here.
it's,
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
gators, we got it all here. But it, so as it shrinks the amygdala, it increases the function of the prefrontal cortex, which is our impulse control, our rational thought. So when you're in the moment and you want to do a couple of deep breaths so you don't say something you wish you didn't say to your boss or your wife, right? You take a deep breath and you can immediately send that message and you can calm down. Breath is incredibly powerful. So it really helps in any of these uncomfortable situations that you might put yourself into, and it'll give you more control while simultaneously decreasing that activation of the brain that takes away your control. Like I was insane. Like I look back, I'm like, man, I was nuts. And it looked like I had it all together, but I was incredibly emotionally reactive for years. And I didn't realize it, but my amygdala, I had like a trauma brain, right? I was constantly here. And as I started doing more of these practices and doing down regulating breath work or somatic breath work, it's like a superpower. I can remain calm.
Everybody
and
says
not
that.
Be emotionally active. Because I was, I mean, we talk about women being nuts. I will tell you, women are crazy, but I get why. Like I was that.
We got that no, recorded.
We are crazy.
Yeah. Hold on.
Yeah, hold on.
Let's
yeah.
stop there. Let's hold focus on that.
Yeah.
No. No, everybody I know that gets into, whether it's a Bikram, breathing, everybody gets down the rabbit hole with the
whatever,
so whatever it is.
Yeah.
They always say, I feel like I have another gear. Like, I know athletes who got into really deep breathing techniques, mm-hmm. and they're like, dude, you thought I was fast before. You should see me now. And it's like, wow. Yeah. And now, so, but that's just like a feeling. Can you give us that high level view of the HRV, which is the situation where you're saying objectively, here's how you can measure the benefit. You said, I feel good. I was looking for that release. Awesome. That's subjective in the, right. in the context of like, that's how I feel. Convince me that there's a measurable way to say you just did a positive thing for yourself.
All right. So HRV, which is heart rate variability. So to back it up a bit, I use this Oura ring, right? And I'm a big fan of it. There's now, I think their patent's up because now I'm starting to see all these other like ring right. sleep tracker, activity tracker things come up. So I didn't know, like I wanted to just improve sleep. I knew sleep was important. I'm a shift worker. I'm like, I got to fix something. Where do I start? I'm going to start here. So it was been tracking my HRV since 2018, but that was kind of an outlier because I got it at the end of the year and I didn't really know what it meant. As I've learned more about it, like breath work increases your HRV. So it's an inverse, like as your heart rate lowers, your HRV goes up. And HRV, that's the variability. It's the space between the beats. So if you have a heart rate of 60, it is not exactly 60, one beat on the second. There's a minor variability between each, and it's milliseconds. But the higher the variability between the beats, it's an objective measure, the only measurement that can measure the health of your nervous system, like versus regulation and dysregulation. So when I put together a PowerPoint, I put my data on there. So in 2019, when I lost my marbles, it was like 78, I think, was the average for the entire year. And this is also a very personal number. So there's not like a range of like, if you're here to here, it's good because that might increase as you get older. It depends on your lifestyle, where you're at. So I didn't know what I was measuring. But when I wrote this article for EMS World last year, I started looking at my data. And as I learned more about HRV, I'm like, holy crap. Because I look at 23's data and it's like 189 or something like that was the average for the year. And you can see this trend every year it goes up as I incorporated more of these practices, as I was able to sit still. Because most of us are like, I can't sit still. I'm not doing that. Like, I can't sit still for 10 minutes. Like, they need to constantly scroll or do or something, right? As I got more comfortable sitting still, doing these practices, whether it was breathing, yoga, which incorporates breath, I float tanks, we'll talk about cold, sauna, it all incorporates the breath and it allowed me to really lower the stress of my body, which increased my HRV. And as I did them more, you could just see this trend. And I feel more clear. I absolutely have more emotional stability because I was insane. Like, I was a crazy person. And now I get why. My HRV was in the tank.
The crapper.
No one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No. So you found the literal data behind it. You felt good. And it was really a good starting point to really understand the nervous system control through breath work. And you're not saying that somatic release breath work is the way to do it. What you're saying is don't be sleeping on the power of breathe in, breathe out.
Just being aware of your breath
yeah.
will actually lower the stress in your body and increase HRV. Just tuning into, are you breathing into your chest or your belly? How fast? Not changing it,
right.
just noticing it will give you that spike. So, and then the other thing that's important about this, right, is low HRV is a strong indicator of depression, anxiety, and it's associated with cardiovascular disease. Well, for the longest time, cardiovascular disease was like the number one killer of firefighters. Now it's suicide. And cancer.
Yeah.
So that's scary, but suicide, depression, anxiety, right? If we can increase our HRV, we're not as susceptible to these things. We have more resiliency.
Yeah, a lot of cancers can be mitigated through health factors too.
That's a whole other episode.
True.
Yeah. So I think we nailed the breath work really well. And I think you really gave a good look at, you got to be mindful of your breathing. And then there's some legitimate data out there to show you how it's fixing your nervous system. So let's go to the next one, which is a little bit more out there. It's float tanks.
Now, this one I really want to get into because this is what I'm interested in.
Do you know the history of float tanks?
I don't.
Okay, we'll Google after. But if you look up the, I think it's John C. Lilly. He invented the float tank, and there was a lot of psychedelics involved. So a lot of experiments on the fringe.
So I don't know the history of the float tank, but a lot of one of the main doctors that I found that studied the float tank and the brain waves, he'd been studying them from the 60s.
Yeah.
And he retired like in the early 2000s or late 90s. So, I mean, they've been studying for a long time.
Yeah. So give us an overview. Like, what is it? How does it
teach
work?
Me about the float tank?
Yeah, my guy over here is like,
I'm so into it. I've asked guys who have gone there, but I haven't done it yet.
Okay.
It's one thing I want to do.
I'm going to take them.
And
it's one of those things again, right? The people you listen to, we're influenced, even if we don't know these podcasters that we listen to.
Right.
But I was like, people kept mentioning float tanks. I'm like, what's a float tank? So I like all these things, like it's like this little voice in my head that had been quieted for so long started I started listening to her, and she was like, you gotta go float. You gotta go do this breath thing. I'm like, all right. So a float tank, it's this pod, right? And it's got about 10 to 12 inches of water in it. And it's got 1,000 pounds of Epsom salt. So like the Dead Sea, you can float. If you've ever been, it's like, it's wild. I went 2 years ago and it like forces your body up. Like it's forceful, the buoyancy. And the water is like, I think it's like 85 degrees. It's about the surface temperature of your skin. So you go in there nude, you shower before, you get in the water, it has like a little headrest. But the temperature of the water is what's important, because as you start to get still and the water stops moving, you lose the proprioception, like the knowledge of where your body is in time and space. So you feel like you're completely suspended in space because you're weightless and you can't tell where your body ends and the water begins. The pod. Now, if you're claustrophobic, people get nervous, and I've got to be in a pretty tight space for it to start to bother me, but I can reach my arm up and not touch the roof of this thing. But it's the light in the room is motion activated, so you could leave it open probably if you wanted to. I wouldn't say you're like, don't do it. See if it works. So there's no sound. There's no sight. There's none of this. It is just sensory deprivation, and you go in there. So when I first went, I asked the dude at the desk, I'm like, well, how long do you go in there for? Because I found when I started, I was Googling for like probably like 2 years until a studio finally popped up near me. And I was like, oh, yes, I'm going. So I asked the guy, I'm like, how long? And he goes, have you ever done this before? I said, no. He goes, 90 minutes. I go, 90 minutes? I can't sit still for 90 minutes.
Wow. Wow.
I can't sit still for 30 minutes,
yeah,
10 minutes.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, no, it's going to take you half of that time to like settle down. And I was like, all right, dude, you're the expert. And I was, I'm not going to try to override the dude who knows what he's talking about. So he was right. It took me about 45 minutes to stop fidgeting, to stop like moving. And like, but I look back now, I think that was my body like discharging energy that was keeping me from sitting still. It was just coming. Like, you know how when you go to sleep and you jerk?
Yeah, right? Those are the gremlins trying
like
to get out.
Oh, yeah.
I was not falling asleep yet. I was just very aware of what was happening.
Right.
And then eventually I got to this point where I was so still, all I could feel was the vibration or the ripple of the water that was coming from my heart. So every time my heart beat, I could feel that tiny ripple in the water. And then I just tuned into that. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I started paying attention to my breath. This all happened. Like, I didn't go in with a plan. I had zero plan.
Yeah.
I was just going in to go float. I was like, I have no idea. And then I was like, oh, and then I started like counting my breaths. And then I started playing. I'm like, how slow can I breathe? And I would inhale for six and exhale for six. And I would get my breaths per minute down to like 3 or 4. And I was just like, inhale. I would play games with myself. So I got into that space for about 45 minutes. Over time, I try to go once or twice a month because you can't go every day. Like, it's a lot of time. And my sweet spot's about 60 to 75 minutes. My body now, I can drop in pretty quickly. And then my body just starts to wiggle around like in between the 60 and 75 minute mark. So I don't do the 90 minutes anymore. I don't feel like it's necessary now that I got there. But I came out and I was just like, I didn't have any psychedelic experience there. But I have in there, like you can get deep into meditation and just kind of like have whatever visuals you want. But what's cool about it is I learned this, our brain processes 11 million bits of information per second from the clothes, the temperature, all the things around you that you're not super paying attention to, your brain's aware. So your brain's always going. And you'd think like, well, it shuts off in sleep. No. You ever hear something in your sleep? Your partner, somebody rolls over, the sheets get weird, you're in a hot spot, you want the cold spot. Like, You know, like your brain doesn't shut off. So the tank takes away all of that, takes away all the senses, so you can really slow it down and you start to reduce your brain waves, right? We spend our time in beta doing the things. Like there, I have like a little graph of this, right? How fast our brain moves. When you start to like daydream and imagine, you go into like alpha and you're kind of like slowing down. And that space right before like sleep, then you get into the theta, which is slow, deep sleep, very restoring and recovering. And you can get that in an hour in float. So you can actually float for an hour and feel like you slept for 8 hours because you can get to that brainwave state that is really hard to do, even if you're meditating and you're like, I'm gonna meditate for an hour. Good luck getting the same result because you're aware.
Yeah.
You're still aware. So you gotta shut it down.
Wow, that's interesting. So it's like a passive way to access that part of your brain. So if you want to get bigger muscles, you have to actively put the work into, flexion, extension, rest, all those things. What you're saying is go do nothing, so much nothing that you can't tell where your body is.
Yes. Yeah.
Do as little as possible.
Well, I mean, you're giving the brain a break.
That's my point.
I mean,
And then
you're letting the brain rest and chill out. Yeah. I mean, it's.
But that's when those big pops happen, like you were saying, like whether it's psychedelic or euphoria or something. Now that the brain is not spending the energy on the worry gremlins or the to-do list or the whatever, it's amazing what your brain will do.
And because you get to that space, you get to have better sleep, stress relief, reduction in anxiety, the endorphins, right? The reduction in cortisol. Everyone knows about these stress hormones. All of that happens, but it's because of where it's taking you, right?
The complete
We're
opposite of a call at 4 a.m.
Yes.
complete
Yes.
opposite of
Complete opposite. There couldn't be any more opposite. Yes.
Okay. So cool. Float tanks. We're going to go do that.
We definitely are going to go do
Sold.
that.
So,
I'm in, except yeah.
so there's a different kind of,
and play with your breath, right? Like I said, I had zero plan
right.
and I just like started noticing these different things. Playing with different breathing, right? Because the breath is powerful. It's the only way to override the autonomic response. Because I imagine when you first get in there, it's kind of stressful because you're like, it's new, it's
Right.
weird, it's dark, it's a pod. You're like, am I gonna get locked in here? Like,
Yeah, once you're
you
in there a
like go
couple
through the
times, you're
stress
comfortable with
response
your
first.
environment.
Well, I think it's also that unknown. You
That,
know what I
well, like
mean?
she said, once she settled in, now she's
Yes,
like 75 minutes, I'm in, I'm out, I'm hyper
it's
efficient.
like, am I going to be seeing the coyote in the desert? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like that,
hopefully.
that,
Do it right.
that type of thing. But I think that's part of it too. But I'm excited to try it because it's one of those things I've wanted to do. I've talked to people about. I'm all in. You know what I mean?
Come up by me. They got a couple.
No, we'll have to get together, dude. We'll have
Yeah,
to,
we'll do this. We're going to do this. We're
yeah,
going on a
we'll
date.
put it out
So,
even.
but the other
So.
thing we're going to do is get a different type of tank. And you and I
Oh boy.
love these types of tanks. So I have a water trough on the side of my house in Michigan, very easy to cool the water, especially right now. We're still in very early spring. Well, late winter, early spring. I don't even know where we're in right now. Early March. And so it's cold enough for me to go out there, get that water down to 40 something degrees, if not a little bit colder, and then make it hurt. And so I have noticed that breathing is the key to survival in that cold, number one. But then I've also physically felt a number of the benefits from cold plunging. So I'm excited for you to talk about this one. Let's talk about cold plunges. Compare and contrast the use of these compared to like a float tank.
Well, the float tank, like I said, it's nice and cozy in there. Like it actually feels warm when you first get in. And then when she's like, then there's no change in temperature. Then it's just, you're just
I
there.
am the
There's no
water.
temperature.
Yes. I am the water.
The cold tub is a little bit different. There's another thing, right? With like the voice in my head's like, you got to go get in the cold. Now, let me remind you, none of these things, the float tank sounds like we're super peaceful and it is. But when you first start doing it, it is uncomfortable because we don't like to sit still. We're doers. That's why I'm giving you things to do, right? We're
Right.
doers. But sitting still is one of the things you have to do. And that's hard. It's uncomfortable. The cold tub, uncomfortable. It can be very confrontational. It can be painful. A lot of people, fingers and toes, but it is also so healing, right? You get this cascade of events, the epinephrine and the norepinephrine that comes with the stress response, right? We're putting our body into this stressful state, and then we're using the breath, like you said, to downregulate, to override that stress response. And that's like, it gave me a superpower. I was telling one of my chiefs yesterday. I said, I started doing the cold, and it was probably 6 months, maybe a year after I started doing it. I had a second alarm church fire, and I was like 2 minutes away. So I ran the scene. And inside, when you're running a scene like that, you're like, am I doing it right? Is everything going okay? And like, my brain's going 1,000 miles a minute. like the duck, right? The duck under the water.
Oh, yeah.
But on the radio, I always seem composed. No one's ever said like your frantic command. Thank God. I don't want that.
Don't want to be the screamer. Never want to be a screamer.
Yeah, we don't want to be a screamer. Yeah. So, but inside, I would feel this way. Well, then I ran this fire and I didn't feel that way. It was like everything was moving in slow motion. I can attribute that to, I think, the cold, honestly, because putting my body under stress and then overriding that stress response with the breath, like that down regulation breath, the extended exhales, it's like a superpower. Really what we're doing is we're stimulating the vagus nerve. It always goes back to that parasympathetic tone that we can stimulate with the vagus nerve, and whether that's humming, breathing, cold is the best non-invasive way to stimulate the vagus nerve. And you can stimulate that parasympathetic system. There's different ways to do it. There are, you know, temperatures and times vary. I have a tub at my house. It's always 39 degrees and I do about 3 minutes a day. I have done 10 because I have an ego. I wanted to see if I could do 10. And I had like a little competition. I'd be like, I did 10 minutes. And then my friend was like, well, yeah, well, I did 10:30. And I was like, urgh. So I still have this ego, right? We can't get away from it. Yeah. I feel like
it's a healthy the fun part of your personality. Likes to push things a little bit.
Yeah. So, but there is there is the point of diminishing. You will put your body in a more stressed state when you do that. Of course, I did that before I learned that.
You got to cross the line before you know where the line is.
Right. I learned it all the hard way.
Right. Yeah. Really, I think at the sweet spot. Would you say that it's like learning how to micro dose extreme adversity?
Yeah, right. It's the most effective with the least amount.
Right.
We're in this culture, right? More, bigger, better.
I know.
That's not always.
No. Optimized dose. What is the optimized dose, right? And like you said in temperature before, so let's get into this. I think it's the temperature really is about shocking your system. So I think it's less about the number than it is to what my body is adapted to at this time. So if I've been cold plunging for over a year now, I can get into that 35 to 45, no problem. And when I say no problem, it doesn't look like I'm having a great time, but I'm going to stay in there and make it work. And I know all the techniques. But some people starting at 50 is fine. It's absolutely fine. 46, 47, that's fine. And I kind of cover that shock is really the point we're getting at.
Exactly. So when I learned from Adrian, who is, she's Morosco, Adrian Jessic. So she's the one who certified me in this and she's been doing this a long time. It was all about getting to the base of the neck. And her tubs, those Morosco, if you've ever seen them, it's the one like Joe Rogan has, and it has like the coils on the bottom that build this big block of ice. Then you heat the coils, the ice rises to the top, and you use like a steel mace. It's very optically pleasing. Like you get to smash the ice. And so at the studio that I was guiding, we had one of those, and we had this other round cold, just a cold tub. Like that was cool. So she's like in the 32 degrees, 2 minutes is all you need. And it's all about the breath, right? When you get to be that cold, like 32 and a half degrees, you don't need to go more than 2 minutes. Now you will get cold adapted and you might not get the shiver response. So you can maybe, like she would say no more than five at any point in time, but then you need to take a break, right? Get your body back. So anytime I travel or I'm away from my tub for a while, it is hard. That 2 minutes is hard. It's hard. It took me 26 seconds over the holidays to get back into my breathing. I can usually get in and just do one or two deep breaths and then I can just sit there and breathe. No problem. I was away from my tub for a bit, traveling, staying at my boyfriend's house. We're all over the place. I was away from my tub for like 2 weeks. My anxiety started to kick up and I was like, I need to get back in there. But when I got back in there, 26 seconds, it took me, I time it every time to get my breath. So I was clearly, I was not as adapted just in that 2 week period.
Use it or lose it.
Yeah. So, but it was also a good thing, right? Yeah. It was a good thing I stepped away from it. And then the cool thing, after about 4 days of back into my regular schedule, my anxiety started to come back down. For me, it's just like kind of repetitive, not true stories in my head. So the warmer the tub, the longer the duration, but it is about what you can stand. I have a friend of mine who just started doing it 50 degrees and she was able to do like 4 minutes. And then she goes, and then it felt unbearable. I said, okay, that's your threshold. Eventually you'll be able to go more. And if you can't lower the temperature, you'll have to do more time. And it also depends on what you're looking for. Metabolic response. You want that shiver response to build the brown fat. You're looking for the anti-inflammatory, the physical recovery. There's that, but I like a mental component. Like for me, I do this for mental health.
Now, say the people listening, you just talked about it. They're bought in on this and they want to do it. What are those steps for those people who are just getting into it to do the cold plunges?
So I am super biased here.
That's okay. We're asking your opinion.
So I personally tell people to find where there's a guided cold plunge, because even though I've been doing this now for 3 years, I have one in my home. So most of the time I'm not guided. I love to be guided. And I still hear Danny. She was the one, she was a veteran and she was living up in Maine. She was the one who built the studio that I started plunging at. And then she was like, I'm telling everybody and their mother about it. She's like, do you want to work here? I'm like, yep. Why not have five jobs? Because we discovered that's what I do. I still do it. So I was like, but this was different. This was helping. And so she was like, I was trying to recreate what she felt when she was deployed. Right. So she comes back and I just still hear her when I first got in the water and I could only do like 2 minutes, is you are safe. Because a lot of what we talk about when it comes to mental health, you have to feel safe, safe before anything else. It's number two under food and air and water on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? So you need to feel safe. And she just kept telling me, you are safe. This is what cold feels like. But you are safe and all you have to do is breathe. And for 2 minutes, all I heard was her voice. And so being guided is huge. So I will always say you find a guide. Now, a lot of these studios are popping up. I stopped by one yesterday to see, and it's like, we'll guide you through the first one, but then you have a membership and you just do it yourself. I'm not saying people can't do it. But those of us who are really struggling, like I loved, and for my first few months, even when she gave me that job, I would go in there and be like, will you guide me? I could do it. I had my own tub by this point, but having somebody there with you creates community and connection, which is healing in and of itself, and reminding yourself that you are in a stress state, but you're safe. You're okay. And it's cold. So I would tell people that. And then you're also working with someone who knows the process, who can guide you. And maybe there's different protocols to do. Like when I got super adapted, I started doing things like in for a minute, out for 20 seconds, in for 45 seconds, out for 10 seconds, and then in for 30 seconds. The in and out is hard. Like I can get in and sit there, but getting in and out, oof, you can get colder. Like I'll get a shiver response doing 3 minutes of that than just sitting in there for 3 minutes. So you can start to work with somebody who knows different protocols, who can challenge you mentally, who can remind you that you're safe and keep you accountable. If you're going to do it yourself, then there's the ice, there's this other way. And I would just say, start at 2 minutes and practice box breathing, 4-7-8 breathing. Maybe you just work on the lengthening the exhale. Cause we all start out with the
That's the big one. Yes. I found that the big one is as soon as I could force that breath all the way out, I was fine. Yeah. I was fine. I was uncomfortable.
That's it.
But you feel and I can safe. Hear it. You know what I mean? Like,
when I guide people, I do like sound bowls and I'll just tell them, I'm like, keep doing it, keep doing it. And I'll hear when it's just like a couple seconds longer, I'm like, you got it. I'm like, that's it. And then the next one's even longer, longer, and then they can settle. And that's normal. That is the body's sympathetic response. Like you're going to upregulate your heart rate. You're going to upregulate breathing. All these things are natural. You're using the breath, which is super powerful, to override and then put your body in this place of calm, safety. You're safe.
There's one more thing that I think it is very beneficial. And we used one thing I'd like to use is shame. And we all went to the lake as a crew after shift. And, you know, this is like 12, 15 of us. And so we're like, let's go. And a couple people had done it and I had not done it yet. And the very first time went in, went out in 10 seconds. And you're talking 27 degree water that's still moving, that is very cold.
Oh, yeah.
And then next time we show up there, it was like, all right, I'm getting back in there. And there's 20 of my brothers and sisters around me.
Peer pressure.
And we all got in there and we all stayed. But your point is, like, you had a guide to talk. Now, we kind of had, some people had some, like, hey, you got to breathe, you got to do this. Now, these were not professionals. These were our buddies, essentially. But at the same time, that sense of community made it a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're thinking about doing this, find a buddy, a friend who's also interested to motivate you, and then do some work on like breathing before and after that can help you understand it. But I don't want to make this like overcomplicated and really it's got to be this temperature and this amount of time. And you got to just get cold, breathe in, breathe out at this point, and you're going to make some strides.
And that's exactly what I do. I coach people. I coach them through the breathing that I want them to do before we get in the tub. I get them to drop in, spend like 2 minutes, 3 minutes there. And then I'm like, all right, Now, at the sound of the bull, we're going to get in the water nice and slow and controlled. We're not going in, rah, we're not, that's not what we're here to do.
This was way better than what I did.
Cannonball! You guys jumped off the dock.
No, we didn't. Yeah. We had to walk in, and it's a very short, it's very shallow the whole way. Yeah. So you're suffering for like 50 feet.
Yeah. So the complete opposite of what she said.
It's awful.
It's exactly what we do. You know, it's funny. So I showed up at a station doing rounds one time, and there's nine guys there, and they're all getting in. They have the just this trough, and they're dumping ice in there, and they're all doing it. So one of the guys, and I'm like, I happened to walk up right when they were starting, and the guys were struggling. They were in and out in like 10 seconds, 13 seconds. And I was like, you guys mind if I like coach you through some of this? And they were like, yeah, okay. And one of them, he was only in there for 13 seconds. I go, I can get you to 3 minutes, I promise. And it was like, no way. And I've got all of these asshats behind me doing whatever they're doing, right? And I kept telling them, I go, right here, look at me. Like, you're right here, you were safe. And I went through the whole protocol, you were safe. And I just breathe, I go, breathe with me, breathe with me. And every time he would look behind me at these.
Yeah, we get it, we know, we know.
Right, and he's looking at them and I'm like, no, no, no.
Look, I am the captain now.
Yeah, you and me were right here. And every time, and because he was like, he's like, I'm not built for cold. You know, he's, I'm.
Everybody says that. Everybody thinks that. I was too. I hate it. I hate it. I lasted 10 seconds.
You came from Michigan. How are you not built for the cold?
No, but everybody, I'm talking like 30 degree cold, right? I know. So, but like the very first time I did a jump in it, literally 10 seconds. And I was proud of myself for just getting in up to my neck. Yeah. That was the goal. I'm going to get in up to my neck and I'm going to get down.
I love that. I love that you're like, I got in. I didn't laugh. That was okay.
Win.
And it's funny because every time he gets in that water now, when he does it, and he's not like, you know, a super regular practitioner like some of us are, but he goes, I saw him the other day and he goes, and he's not one of my normal guys, and he says, you know, every time I do it, I hear you in my head. And I go, I get that. I go, I have somebody in my head too. In my head. Yeah. I'm in your head, she's in my head.
One of the many voices in my head.
There's more, but
Oh yeah. No, I got you.
Okay, so getting cold, you said dose and duration. So you're talking in that 30 to 50 degrees, depending on, it's a big, wide, huge range.
It's a big range.
The lower you go, looking at 2 to 3, 4 minutes.
Depending, the lower the temperature, the shorter duration, higher the temperature, the longer the time.
Right.
In order to get that. But sometimes, like you said, just getting in and then building on that. But really be honest with yourself. Like, it's going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Can you do a little bit longer? Because like sometimes I'll go in there and be like, all right, I just have 2 minutes today. And then I get to 2 minutes, I'm like, I'll do 30 more seconds. And then I'm like, all right, I'll do 30 more seconds.
Yeah.
So I really try to be real with myself and be like, what do I need? Can I do this? And am I just being a baby? Because all of these things that are healing, they're uncomfortable.
Yeah, growth sucks sometimes.
It's uncomfortable to talk to somebody. It's uncomfortable to get in a float tank. It's uncomfortable to get cold. It's uncomfortable to get hot. Like, hot feels good initially, but there's a point at which you're like, I got to get out of here. That's your work.
Yeah. You got to get uncomfortable to get comfortable.
Got to get uncomfortable to get the benefits. You do.
Yes.
There's nothing in life that comes with a free lunch.
No.
You know, it really doesn't. You want to do something, you better get after it. It ain't just going to show up.
Right.
Okay, so getting cold, it's good for me. Got it. Now, what about the opposite there? Getting hot. Yeah. Another thing I love to do, and I was thinking about this conversation last night, in my sweat tent. I have a very small one. I can't afford the big fancy one. I got two little kids, can't get out of the house all the time. So I make do with a little bit. And then some people got the infrared. They got the fancy ones that get up to 200 degrees.
I wish I had that.
Right, that'd be cool. So walk us through the hot aspect. The cold, you get a huge spike in all the good norepinephrine, epinephrine, dopamine, serotonin, all your good hormones spike for hours. I feel amazing.
That's the best part. That dopamine kick for 6 hours, you're euphoric, right? Yeah. We're all looking for little dopamine hits all day long.
Yeah. Cold plunges have made me, they've made me understand crackheads. Like, I get it. I'm not saying do it. I'm saying I get it. I need another hit. I need my hit. But, okay, so the hot aspect of it, how does that, do I need to do cold with it, or is hot its own thing?
You don't have to. There's so many different studies on all of this, right? Dr. Rhonda Patrick will tell you, like, she's a big proponent of mental health and brain health and dementia, and she's all about the sauna. There's different protocols for this. I personally like a sauna later in the day. It helps me sleep better. So when you spike your temperature in a restful state, right, when you're going and you're working out, sweating, like, that's great. You're sympathetic. Your body's cooling down. But when you're in a rested state and you're starting to sweat, you get the detoxification, you get all of these other benefits, but it also stimulates the parasympathetic system. So once, and it's not during the heat, right? It's the calm down. Once you're out of the heat and now your body temperature is coming back down, your heart rate's coming back down, you see the inverse with the HRV, which means you're starting to stimulate the parasympathetic system. That's how we can measure that. You can do hot and cold. So if you do the sauna first and then get into the cold, obviously you'd want to rinse out, you know, rinse off and then get into the cold. Your vessels are dilated, so you're more readily to absorb the cold. So you might not have to sit in the cold as longer to get the same effect. And then you can kind of go back and forth. There's a lot of benefit there. You're working the vessels, the dilation, the constriction, you know, hot, cold. There's that too. You want to work your vessels. You're moving your lymphatic system. That's detoxification, drainage. Do you have to do it together? No, you don't. The benefits are, you're going to get the benefits regardless. They just might not be as intense if you're not doing the contrast.
Or if you're not doing the dose and duration enough. So cover that. How hot do I need to get and how long do I need to stay there? I know you made the same voice, the same, that your look is what they should have up when you Google that. Because it's like Google going, I don't know.
What do you think?
It's dose dependent. It's temperature
titrate
dependent.
To effect.
Also what you can handle.
Yes.
Right. So I have a sauna here. It only goes up to 154 degrees. And that's after I get it hot for an hour because it's a residential home sauna.
Right.
You have to heat it up. It takes forever. And then because it's only, and it is infrared. So it heats you from the inside out. So I love it when you go into like a gym sauna, like you feel the heat all like immediately when walk in.
I like when
that.
It pushes
Those
you to the floor.
Like 190, 200.
Oh yeah.
This though, I have to sit in there for like 30 or 40 minutes to really get a good sweat going. Now I know there's other benefits for infrared and as it comes through the body. For me, I would say once you have that thought of I'm hot, I need to get out, I would then say that's where your timer starts and start with a minute. Can I stay for a minute? Can I stay for two? Because I think everybody has their own threshold. Yeah. So this is something, again, personal. That's what I would say. When you have that, I need to get out of here, you know, and then you're not like, all right, now I'm going to do 10 minutes. No, that's kind of a lot. That's probably pushing you beyond where you need to go. But once you have that feeling of I need to get out, then you build from there. I want to stay for a minute. I want to get out 2 minutes. Build from there. Yeah. Because it's got to be uncomfortable. And then when you come out, you start to feel like that cool, your heart rate comes down and you feel that relaxed state. That's your parasympathetic system. Now, any of these things can work for anybody.
Yeah.
It's what you really like and how uncomfortable are you willing to get with yourself?
I have a folding tent that I can get in and out of the house, get out of the way. And it only goes up to about 120-ish degrees. So I really got to get after it in that thing. And it's also all steam. So it's very difficult to breathe. So it makes it much more uncomfortable because it's steam-based heat.
I've seen something similar to this.
Right. So I can get extremely uncomfortable and I'll put a towel over my nose and I'll get it there because that's really the only option I have. But I think it's really important to highlight in that circumstance that even if you don't have the significant amount of heat, 150 to 180, 190, you can still do this. It's about being uncomfortable. And I feel at a certain point, I feel like I'm doing cardio in that thing and I'm not moving. And that's what I'm looking for. I want to feel
so we
like
talked about
I can't
this, right?
talk.
If you have an injury, if you have an injury, get in the sauna. You can still get your heart rate up and get some cardio without stressing your injury.
Right.
Right there. It is. It will boost your heart rate. Right. I've gotten my heart rate up to like 180 in the sauna.
Yeah, easily.
And I want to do is get out.
Right.
That's all I want to do is get out of that thing.
Right.
There are some like sauna tents where you can keep your head out. The relax saunas. I just recently tried one of those, which was cool. I'm like, man, this thing's toasty. My head's out. So I was able to stay in a lot longer. I haven't tested the temperature to see what temperature it's at, but I could stay in longer because I don't have to breathe the hot air. And I feel like that's actually a game changer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a little window. I put my lips on it and I'll just to get my body, because I want to keep my body hot. But man, when you're breathing in that steam, it hurts. It's not that it hurts. It wears you out so fast. So it's trying to get your core body temperature to go up without, you know, burning out before then. So a lot of this is playing with it and getting interested in it. And it's almost like a hobby for me that I get huge benefits from.
It gives your adrenals a break too, right? That sympathetic system that's always going. You feel people adrenal fatigue and all that. But make sure you're hydrated. Yeah. Electrolytes, be hydrated when you go in there.
So one of the things, would you recommend like drink water before, take electrolytes after? Because you want to replace with, it's not like you need to load up with electrolytes before for something like this. Or is it something that I should do before, during, after?
So I learned recently that they excrete different levels of salt. I'm a very salty sweater. Like I'm also a cyclist. Take off like my bike kit. Like there's like a white ring around certain things. Like that's all my salt. So I'm a salty sweater. So I think that would also be very personal. I drink electrolytes every day because I'm a salty sweater and I live in Florida where it's humid. So As long as you're hydrated and you're replenishing your salt, or even if you're, preloading the salt, you're probably still gonna have to replace it after. Just be aware of that. Make sure you are hydrated and
Yeah.
replace your salt.
Man, the electrolytes and salt has been a huge one for me. The magnesium and salt have made a big
Yes.
difference in my sleep and feeling better. I thought I was like not getting, I wasn't getting good sleep. I was getting quality amount of time, but the nutrition that was lacking was salt and magnesium, and it made a really big difference for me. And I noticed, but because I was doing the electrolytes right after at night when I do my sauna, I do my cold, I'm like loaded with electrolytes right before bed and magnesium. So it's like, oh,
The
I
magnesium is a game
accidentally.
changer,
Oh,
dude.
huge, huge.
Magnesium is definitely a game changer.
Magnesium and B vitamins, super important for the health of your nervous system.
Yep,
Oh, okay.
Which would make
absolutely.
sense, good sleep.
Right, right. And so, like earlier in your life and all of our lives, like we were stacking all these bad habits, working hard, going running in the red. Those are stacking bad things to eventually topple on top of you, where this is the opposite. We're stacking all these good things. And nothing we talked about today, maybe the float tank's difficult to find. It's because you could find a tank and get cold and do whatever, but finding 1,000 pounds of salt and getting in a very cold, that's difficult to do. But you could find easy to do breath work anywhere these days. You could find a practitioner probably in most places. You can get
Sure.
cold, you
You
can get
too.
hot. Yeah, all those places. So it's really about implementing these things and really finding out more. I think Crystal's giving us some insight as a human being going, yo, this is how I'm using this to mitigate the same lifestyle that you have in a busy area. But I don't think it's just those things. There's some obvious stuff like a balanced lifestyle. And as somebody who's been a practitioner of a health industry person outside of the fire service and an actual person that practices what she preaches in the frontline community. Walk us through some of the other things we need to do that are obvious.
So, I always go like, it sounds so silly. Diet, though. Diet is really paramount. Like, let food be thy medicine. It'll also be your poison. If you've ever said the words, I'm hangry, you get on a very intuitive level that food affects your mood, right? Think about your best favorite meal ever or your favorite snack. It makes you happy. Like, I love chocolate chip cookies. Those things make me happy. Like, I'm smiling. I'm like a little kid, but like it affects your mood, right? So your serotonin, right? The vagus nerve goes from the brain to the belly. Your serotonin is your happy hormone and it's made in your gut. Like I think 80% of it's made in your gut. One of the number one selling antidepressants is an SSRI, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Blocks the receptor, so there's more serotonin in the brain, so you're happier. So the food you eat matter. You need to eat your magnesium rich, B vitamin rich. I'm not a nutritionist. But having protein with every snack and meal, healthy fats, our brain's mostly fat. So having EFAs, ooh, I love this study. So there was a study done by Oxford University with prison inmates. And all they did was they took this one group and they gave them a multivitamin and an EFA. They were still eating the same food as everybody else and then watched them for 4.5 months. That was the only difference. And after 4.5 months, they saw a 37% decrease in violent acts of these prison inmates. There was also like a 35% decrease in disciplinary stuff and all that, but the 37% decrease in violent acts was huge.
That's
So
just from the food. Just food?
just from no,
No,
not food,
multivitamin.
a
Oh, just from, sorry,
multivitamin
just
and
from,
an essential fatty acid, not food. They were still eating the same
I was going
whatever
to say,
food
because the
it
food
was.
there is not good from what I hear. And I've been there,
Right.
but I would
No, it's probably
imagine.
not.
Okay. So they were
So
actually
all they
just giving them
did.
supplemental vitamins that they weren't getting in the
That's it.
porridge or whatever.
So the lead scientist said that a bad diet is a better predictor of violent behavior than past violent behavior.
Wow.
Yeah.
Objectively.
Objectively. So to me, like the food you eat matters. And eating processed sugars and more processed foods in general, right? Industrialized seed oils creates inflammation systemically, but it also stimulates the body much like sugar and caffeine. Processed sugar acts like caffeine in the body. So these things are still going to stimulate your system. They're going to increase that activation. But you have to remember, like everything, the brain, the gut brain axis, the gut's like your first brain and your brain's like your second brain because everything's made here. So what you feed it matters. That microbiome controls inflammation, digestion, your circadian rhythm, your heart rate, your immune system. Your immune system's repaired at night. So you need to feed your belly. The whole microbiome that's in there controls everything. We're not the best when it comes to food. And we have like fat boy Sundays, like every shift. So like, and some of like, it's like
How am
horrible
I just
food.
now learning Fat Boy Sundays? I'm
Why have
Fat
we
boy
not heard
Sunday. They
that
have Fat
before,
boy
dude?
Sunday and they'll make insane things like the Corona burger with the bait. They do some, I mean, amazing food, but sure, it's like going to the carnival every third day.
That's the problem eating, in our industry.
You know,
deep fried Oreos.
If you didn't come back with a gallon of ice cream when I got hired, you were like in trouble. Now we've come a long way where I work. We've come a very long way. We have a lot more athletes. It's getting better because nobody wants to be unhealthy as much as possible. But I think it's important to point out that you're not saying don't have fun with food sometimes, but realize that those types of food are fun. They're not fuel. And you can't just have fun all the time. You got to have fuel and structure too. So plan to, dude, guess what we're doing today? You know, we haven't done it in a month. We're going to have a Fat Boy Sunday.
You know, one of those things. They do Fat Boy, you know, because typically you work one Sunday a month, maybe two, but they started Fat Boy Sundays and then it just went to like all the time. Some stations, other stations are more conscious. It's a thing. But diet, we talked about alcohol, how that increases the sympathetic response. Also, if you've ever, not just a hangover, but sometimes people will say, and I had this experience, I have a very different relationship with alcohol now. I was even sober for quite a long period of time during this like hard reset that I did. But after having two or three drinks, maybe you're not drunk, but maybe you notice your sleep will be wrecked regardless.
Yep.
But your anxiety might increase over the next like 24 to 72 hours. You might notice maybe you're a little bit more emotionally reactive, maybe more irritable. Maybe you can control some of this, but you're like maybe more snappy. But it starts to affect you. And not so much that you're like, oh, I'm dead on the couch with a hangover kind of way. The almost covert symptoms. So just knowing that there's not just that one night or maybe the next day cascade effect. There's a few days following. Same thing with caffeine. Right. Poor sleep. Oh, my God. I could spend an hour talking about sleep, but we have to be better about sleep hygiene, keeping our sleep regular, not being on the screens, the blue light. I wear those silly orange glasses at night. They all make fun of me. I don't care because my deep sleep suffers if I don't wear them because sometimes I have to be reviewing reports. I put those things on. My deep sleep increases by like 25%. Like I said, I track it. So I see it. My REM sleep also increases. If I don't wear those, I see a decrease in both of those. And I am very much attached to my deep sleep and my REM sleep. So, and it's hard for shift workers where we have a higher propensity for mental health issues just because we're not sleeping. We tend to isolate. We can't be around people because it's just a lot. We're tired. And then we're not involved in social settings, family and friends, which further precipitates that feeling of loneliness and disconnectedness. We need to feel safe and connected. That's a cycle.
Oh, it's a huge cycle.
There's a lot of factors. You know, then we have the calls. We're a rough crowd. We're going to poke fun. Yeah. We're going to do these things.
And I think the overall thing is what we're getting at is there's no one silver bullet here. Uh-uh. You talk about mental health. Well, mental health, physical health follows mental health, vice versa. You have to take care of the whole body. It's not just you go get a medication, you go talk to somebody, whatever. There's a lot of factors that are contributing to that mental health portion of things. That's one of the big things I hope people take away from today is there's a lot more things out there than just taking a pill or going to talk to somebody. There's these things that we can do that for a long time were probably looked at as out of the box. You know what I'm saying?
I think you're still a little out of the box.
Yeah, but there's data to support it.
It's more mainstream, though, for sure.
Yes, it's more mainstream, and they're starting to show that there is this connection here, you know, and there's a lot more stuff that we can do on our own to help increase the chances of improving your physical, mental, emotional health that necessarily we may not have looked at as something to do 5 years ago, 10 years ago, to where now it's becoming, like you said, more mainstream. The data is showing this is how it's helping us. And I just hope a lot of people kind of open their minds and just give this stuff a try because it's all interconnected. Like the gut health portion of it, people don't think about that. You know, the gut health is huge. You know, people with leaky guts, all those types of problems. You just fix something as small as that, and now you've got an improvement. But it's just changing what you eat.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Or finding out what's causing it.
Exactly.
Stress causes leaky gut. I had it.
Yep.
I had to do the allergy test, found out, and I ate a ton of eggs. I'm allergic to eggs. And I was, like, living on them. That was another component, right? It matters.
Yeah. It does. It does. And I just hope people open their minds and try these things because it is. It's they're game changers. But they're not the normal mainstream thing. You know what I mean?
They're becoming like, that way. Yeah,
it's cool to see it, how far they've come, you know?
I think a lot of people in our industry, too, hear about it a lot, and they don't know where to start. And I hope this conversation helps them start the path to do any of this. any of it, whether it's just Googling breath work, like, all right, what's box breathing? If you just start with box breathing, you'd be surprised at how much you can control yourself.
Any of this piqued your interest.
Right. Yes. Any of it. Google it. Look it up. Mike and I are going to go float here soon. Then I'm going to make it really cold and really hot. We're going to have a great day.
We talked about we're going to do it. We're actually going to do like little clips.
We're going to FaceTime you from the hot box.
Hey, now.
But that just beats the whole purpose. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
We'll send you, we'll call you after, before and after, and you can tell Mike how much happier he sounds.
Yeah.
Not that he's a sad guy or anything, but this is unbelievable. And we really appreciate your time today. You've really broken this down. And I think it's really important that, you know, Crystal, you're a firefighter talking to two other firefighters who understand the whole frontline community, and you've taken the time to become somewhat of an expert in these things that you're hoping to get into the minds and hearts of people to just try. And this is not just for people that are suicidal, depressed, anxious. This is for human beings that want to maintain an optimized nervous system, understand their bodies, and to leverage this amazing innate abilities that our brain and body has. Can be our best friend or can be
this is a human thing. Yeah. This is a human thing. The culture we live in now does not lend itself to this like free flowing, like everything is stress. Like we're constantly like getting notifications and alerts and it's like it's a lot. So this is for humans. We just, take it up a notch when it comes to what we see.
Right.
It's not normal.
The demographic that could probably use it more than some.
Yeah. Sure.
Moms and frontline workers.
Facts.
the two groups that need it.
I say moms all the time because they need it for sure.
Yeah. My wife takes care of my spawn and they're a lot. Yeah. All right, the Crystal. Offspring. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us in the Minds in the Frontline podcast. We hope everyone enjoyed this episode. We have more great content coming out soon. Please check us out on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and make sure to like and subscribe to all Minds in the Frontline podcast social media channels. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.